Digital has given every voice a platform. Will yours be heard? If there is one skill that everyone needs today, it's not just the ability to communicate, it's the ability to connect. My mission is to give you the communication skills you'll need to inform and inspire, sometimes using digital tools, but always with human outcomes. My guest this week, Natalie Mangrum.
You know, your brain is a muscle and it needs to be worked out. And the more you work it, the more it's able to learn. And just talking about the growth mindset and how that can be fostered through grit and hard work and determination, and how failure is absolutely a lesson in resilience. It doesn't have to be the end. It should be the beginning of something. And so that is certainly something that comes up, and that is certainly something that we like to address.
Let's begin. Natalie Mangrum is the founder and CEO of Maryland Teacher Tutors, a private tutoring company that hires certified teachers to go into family homes and provide academic support to students. In 2015, she founded MTT with one teacher and has since grown to 35 certified teachers working under her leadership. Beyond work, Natalie enjoys spending time with her husband and two teenage children. She enjoys kickboxing and learning all she can from people with more wisdom and life experience. Natalie Mangrum, thank you so much for joining the show. Welcome.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start off by talking about your company, Maryland Teacher Tutors.
Yes. So it's funny, anytime someone asks me to talk about MTT, that's what I call it, I always tell them I try to make it so simple. I try to make the name really easy, you know, and super explainable. So essentially, Maryland Teacher Tutors is a company I founded in 2015, where I hire certified teachers to be tutors in Maryland. So that's what we do.
Okay, thanks. So what sets you apart from your competitors? I mean, I'm sure there are lots of companies who do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So just to give just some really brief background in terms of the story and how it's got started, I actually had a colleague when I was working in schools ask, you know, she knew I was a reading specialist. And so she said, hey, I have a girlfriend who her daughter is struggling and she needs some additional help. You know, will you help? And I'm like, sure. At the time, I, to be honest with you, had not heard of private tutoring. I knew that schools had tutoring programs after school for kids. And I was familiar with that sort of model. But when she said, mom wants to pay you directly to have her come, you know, have you come to her house and tutor, I thought, okay, well, that's new to me. I'm happy to try it out, though. And to be frank, I was really surprised by the hourly rate that the mom wanted to pay me. It was more than it was probably triple what I was making as a teacher. And so with that student, I started tutoring on the side, ended up being referred out just because that mom was really pleased with the work that I was doing. And so I got full, essentially, and thought, I don't want to have to turn business away because there's really a need here. And parents seem to be really positively responding to it. And so I reached out to a friend who was teaching and said, hey, do you want to make some extra money? I've been doing some private tutoring. It's really fun. It's very fulfilling. And she's like, absolutely. And so I brought her on board. And once I got to tutor number five, our team is at 35 now, I should say that. But once I got to tutor number five in those early days, I no longer was comfortable having parents send me checks to my personal, like sending checks to Natalie, you know, essentially so that I could pay the tutors. And I thought, it's probably time for me to make this into a legit company, you know, get a name, get a reputation. And so right around 2 to 5, that's what I did. I officially founded Maryland Teacher Tutors. I knew very early on that I only wanted to hire certified teachers. So that goes back to your question about what sets us apart. That's something that I've always felt strongly about as a teacher myself. I feel like teachers have special skill sets and a special sort of expertise that really helps them to relate to kids in a way that maybe an engineer, you know, maybe even though they know math and science, might not be able to. And so that was very important to me from the start. And as far as I know, there are very few, if any, companies who only hire certified teachers. A lot of companies will hire, you know, PhD students who are just experts in their field, or grandma, because she's really good with little kids and she, you know, she can read and knows the ABCs and whatever it is. And so I knew from the very start that I only wanted to hire teachers. And so that's what makes us different.
That's interesting. It kind of reminds me of what I like to say when approaching students. I don't teach children, but I've taught adults for a number of years in the corporate world. And I always say that it's important to come from a space of empathy first and then competency. And I'm wondering, since your background is in teaching and you are a reading specialist, you had to connect with children. And so that's why you have teachers come and help them, as opposed to just someone who's an expert who may not necessarily know how to connect.
Yeah, I would say so. I think all of my roles helped, you know, the role of a mom. So when a parent calls and they're really frustrated and really concerned and worried, I have that aspect to pull from. And then, of course, like you said, the role of being a teacher for so many years, I'm familiar with some of the language and some of the processes that happen in schools, where I can, like you said, empathize with parents about how frustrating that can be, but also empathize with the teachers who are responsible for 30 kids and just don't quite have the time to dedicate to students individually. And so, you know, just dealing with everyone is coming to this from a different place. And I think my ability to relate to people on different levels definitely helps me to be empathetic when it comes to leading the company, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what kind of students do you tutor?
Great question. All. Well, I should say, so we are K through 12. I will say the majority of our students are elementary and middle school. We do have some high school students. That's mostly your SAT prep, your higher level classes, you know, like calculus, physics. And we do actually see adults as well, but it's not something that we, it's not part of our branding necessarily, but we don't really turn anyone away if they need help and we feel like we can help them. So all. As many as we can.
So as someone who is in constant contact with young people and who manages a staff who's in constant contact with young people, what are some of the challenges that are unique to this generation of young people today? I mean, I think about when I went to school and it was a lot different, but every generation has challenges unique to it. Maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, I would absolutely say so. So I think the first thing that comes to mind for everyone when that question is asked or thought about is the technology piece, right? So it's the fact that on one hand, you have a lot of parents who see technology as something that is a distraction, and kids don't have a lot of control in terms of when to put it on a shelf and when to not have a screen in front of them. And then, of course, social media, right, is a challenge because there's this whole world of comparison. And I don't know. I mean, when I was growing up, I really just compared myself to the girls who were in my school, maybe all 300 of them, not millions, and feeling like I wasn't validated or not worth a lot, or just feeling like I needed to keep up. And so social media, I mean, that's something that both the boys and girls struggle with. That's something that's new. And I would say for us, from an academic perspective, the pressure to get into really good schools, it just seems like it's harder than ever. I mean, I think growing up, definitely parents wanted their kids to go to college and get a good job. But I mean, there was just a story that came out recently with two famous actresses who had tried to pay off some schools to accept their kids. And they admitted to this. And like, it was a few days ago. I'm not sure if you heard the story, but I say all that to say that the academic challenge just definitely seems to be unique to this time period, as it seems like it is life or death to some of these parents, for sure.
Yes, I have heard about that. And it gets me to think about how there seems to be a focus on having, you know, the perfect scores, right? The perfect SAT score and having, you know, the perfect grades and coming from the perfect school. And I begin to wonder if the art of learning is somehow lost, right? The art of developing skills kind of fades in the background because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we, is really important to us when working with students is it can't just be about the grades. It can't just be about the scores. We also include some personality assessments, some character development type things, because it's important to us that you're not just this robotic smart person. You need people skills. You need to be a good citizen. You need to know how to love your neighbor and love others and love yourself. And so, yeah, I agree that it can't just be about that, because what kinds of people would we be raising if that were the case?
Well, I'm sure you have had the opportunity to work with some really great kids, and no doubt your staff has had that opportunity too. I was wondering if maybe you could relate a story or some stories about some folks who have done well.
Yeah, so this is always a hard question because there are a lot. And on a regular basis, I am getting calls and texts from parents about the amazing work that tutors do. And as you can imagine, with a team of 35, that's triple, quadruple the number of parents who I'm hearing from regularly. So it's amazing to hear about all of the success about the work that our teachers are doing with students. But for me in particular, when I was a reading specialist in Baltimore City, my principal, it was a new school that I was in, had just gotten the job there. She was more of a math science-y. That was her background. And so as a reading specialist, she's kind of like, I don't really know what goes into that whole thing. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the top 10 kids who are the lowest. Their reading scores are the lowest. Their scores are the lowest. And I want you to just figure it out. And it was interesting because I was teaching at the time. I was working with middle school. And so, you know, sixth and seventh graders for the most part. And one student in particular who was in seventh grade, but was reading on a third grade reading level at the end of one semester, which was just a few months in school life, she was reading and nailing 11th grade SAT questions. And I think, you know, I know that really stood out in my mind when it came to the 101 model and why that was so important and why that was just a seed that was planted that I ended up launching a company from later. Because I realized in that moment, 101 has an incredible impact. And these students, it wasn't just that student in particular. Now, she made the most gains, but in general, the students were really just killing it. And on average, they were growing 3 grade levels in just a few months. And these were the students who were the most behind. So that's one story amongst many, I guess you can say. But yeah, that stands out to me for sure, to be able to see what a student is capable of when you give them the time and attention needed.
That's interesting. And I wonder if we can go to the other end of the spectrum. You know, in the corporate world, executives have coaches to help accelerate their development. I wonder if you work with students who are actually high performers, but maybe their parents want them to, you know, take it to the next level.
Oh, that's such a good question. And the answer is absolutely. I would say percentage-wise, 25% of our families that reach out to us are in that exact scenario where they call and they say, actually, my child's grades are fine. And that's kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier when I said academics has become so important in this day and age. And so they might call and say, my child is getting straight A's, but I am trying to prepare them to go to my alma mater, Princeton, or I am trying to make sure that they follow in my footsteps and pursue law or medical school or whatever it is. And so they are wanting more than what the typical curriculum even at a top private school has to offer. So 25% we get are parents like that, and then the other 75 are the parents who their kids might be behind or they're struggling in a particular subject, like I mentioned, physics or calculus or just typical algebra, you know, those kinds of things. The kids are kind of just getting caught up and stuck and they want some help there.
So now I'm thinking about the kids who might be stuck, and it's not hard for me to think about those kids because I was there. I remember having a really tough time at one point with some science and definitely with math. And I think what can happen to some students is that they develop a fixed mindset. You know, they just think, I'm just not a math person. So there's got to be some psychology there, no doubt, from the tutors. How do you get them to find self-esteem, to find confidence in themselves so they can open up their minds to actually learn the material that they need?
Well, you hit on exactly what we talk to our students about, the growth mindset. So when a student is feeling like a failure because they are struggling, if their confidence is just at an all-time low, it sort of feels like there's just this wall where they don't believe they're capable. They've lost, you know, all confidence in themselves. And so we apply the growth mindset. And what that looks like is we actually have materials and pull materials on malleable intelligence. You know, your brain is a muscle and it needs to be worked out. And the more you work it, the more it's able to learn. And like the growth, you know, just talking about the growth mindset and how that can be fostered through grit and hard work and determination, and how failure is absolutely a lesson in resilience. It doesn't have to be the end. It should be the beginning of something. And so that is certainly something that comes up, and that is certainly something that we like to address with all students, not just the ones whose confidence is lacking, but we think it's important that all students are aware of that, because even the smart students who aren't struggling now, like my son, who I've never seen do homework but has a 4.2, that's not going to carry him forever. He's going to go to college and that's not going to fly, you know? So it's important that all students are aware of that growth mindset for sure.
He's going to love that. Well, you know, I want to shift gears for just a moment and talk about you and when you were young and coming up. And what were your plans? Did you always want to become a teacher? Did you always want to start your own company? What was on your mind at the time?
No, not at all. I never imagined that I would be an entrepreneur. I was pretty much perfectly okay with being a teacher. I did foresee over the course of my teaching career moving up to, you know, team lead. And then, of course, I became a reading specialist and possibly considered administration. That's something that I thought about. But yeah, I thought I would just stay in education. And that is true. I still am in education. But I never thought that that route would be through, that entrepreneurship would be a route for me. It was like the time and place thing where it blossomed on its own. And I had no intention of creating this large, people refer to my tutoring company as large, and I'm still shocked by that. You know, they'll, when they send an email intro, they might say, I want to introduce you to Natalie. You know, she's the CEO of a large tutoring company in Maryland. And I'm like, what? I still feel so unknown and basic, if that makes sense. So no, I never imagined I would be an entrepreneur, but there's nowhere else I'd rather be right now.
That's very interesting, because in addition to being an entrepreneur, you're a coach and a leader, and you have to worry about hierarchy and policies and procedures and payroll. What prepared you for those things, or was it more learning on the job?
It was definitely learning on the fly. It was making a lot of mistakes. It was that same thing we talked about with students. I applied to my own life, or at least tried to, you know, trying to see failures as not failures, but lessons, opportunities to do things better the next time. And of course, this all sounds good right now, but if you had spoken to me in the midst of these challenges, it was like, you know, there were days where I didn't want to get out of bed, and there were days where I was like, I'm going to go back into the classroom. I can't carry this dream anymore. So it's always interesting being on the other side and looking back on some of those harder times, because I don't know, it's just helpful to remember, and I hope that your audience knows that I think sometimes I come across as confident and wow, she really has it together. It was not always that way, and it is not always that way. There are lots of dark times, and there are still a lot of obstacles. So, yeah.
You know, I appreciate you being so candid. I think right now there's a level of romanticism with entrepreneurship, especially as relates to branding. And so highlighting that there are ups and downs, I think, is really important. So thank you. You know, I know we spoke a little bit about this before, but I suspect that there's a pretty intense vetting process when you're identifying new tutors. I'd like to know the kind of person you're looking for to foster relationships with parents. What do you go through? What kind of person are you looking for to carry on those types of relationships?
Yeah, so this is one of those questions where my answer may be a little different than most people. I don't have an objective list that I use. I depend on my gut in a lot of those situations. And not depending on my gut in the past has led me down the wrong road and has been sort of the launch pad for a lot of those obstacles and challenges that I've been through, not following what I felt was not a good fit or what I felt was not a good idea. So when it comes to hiring teachers, number one, the obvious, the first thing I do is make sure they're teachers, and I confirm, you know, I'll talk to their principal and make sure that their observations are good and that the principal is happy with the work that they're doing. Of course, it's never a competition type thing, because the principal is happy to have the teacher, you know, find something fulfilling and educationally related to do outside of the classroom. But when I talk about my gut instinct, one of the things, or one of the many things I do, is when I meet with a tutor in person, I'm looking at personality. I'm looking at, is this person relatable? Is this person, does this person have a sort of charm about them? And that charm doesn't have to look the exact same for everyone, but is this person likable? Does this person make sense? Does this person come across as competent? And even before I sit down with teachers, those initial first touch points where, you know, I get emails all the time where a teacher will say, hey, I'm interested in working for MTT. Here's my resume. I have sort of started doing things like saying, okay, I'm so glad. Thank you for reaching out. Give me a call when you get an opportunity, and I'll leave my number. And I intentionally don't schedule a call, because the teachers who reach out to me quickly versus the teachers who I don't hear from for 3 weeks, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, my gut says this teacher's hungry and really wants to have an impact and make a difference and is excited about making another income and working with students outside of the four walls of their typical classroom. Whereas the other teacher is just kind of like, I'm sort of looking for work. I'm not sure. I might also do Starbucks. You know, there's like some certain things that I can tell from the very beginning. So again, that's not something I can really put down on a list and hand someone and say, hey, here's what I want you to do when it comes to the vetting process. But those are things that I've learned matter for the work that we do and for the relationships and rapport that are built with the families we work with.
Let's talk a little bit about communication. That's important for our listeners. What type of communication skills are you looking for? Because I know that's definitely an important quality to have as a tutor.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You were asking about the digital landscape earlier, and technology was just one of the things that I mentioned. Technology has been huge for me and my team and for the families that we work with. So we communicate as a team through like GroupMe is an app that we use where we can all kind of, you know, I can share announcements and we can chat. And text is the primary mode of communication between myself and my tutor team. And majority of my tutor team are millennials, because when you think about it, some of millennials are still single. They don't have families quite yet. So they're okay ripping and running around the city, you know, going into families' homes and working with students to make some extra money. So text is the primary mode of communication. We send progress reports and things like that that are more formal to our families. But text is also the primary mode of communication between family and tutor. It's just fast. Tutors and students use it. If a tutor doesn't have a session planned with a student for a while, but the student has a question, you know, they can reach out quickly, maybe hop on FaceTime, you know, all these different things communication wise that have changed over the years. And so we're just open to whatever is convenient and whatever works for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about this before, but I'm just curious as to how you want them to communicate with the kids one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. So I want them to be trusted. For example, in the first session, the tutor does not jump right into content or subject matter. The tutor spends time sitting down with the family, getting to know the dynamics, because families look a lot different. We're not working with, a lot of our families are not the traditional nuclear family that I saw growing up. So it's, you know, oh, okay, who is here? Who are the people I need to know? Okay, grandma, mom, and maybe an aunt is here, or whatever it might be. And so we spend some time getting to know the family. We spend some time making sure that our tutors are familiar with all of the people who are involved in the academic success of the child. So who's the teacher? What's the contact information? How do I get to know that teacher? And then we spend time, which is one of the things that a lot of tutoring companies neglect to do, is we spend time with the student. How are you feeling about how you're doing in algebra? What are your thoughts? What are your goals? Outside of you wanting to please mommy and daddy, what is important to you? What moves you? What kind of rewards are meaningful for you? So we spend a good bit of time trying to get to know the student so that we can build that trust. Mm-hmm. And after building that trust, that makes the communication aspect so much easier.
That's fantastic. And when you begin to work with the family, no doubt there has to be a partnership in place between, you know, you, your tutors, and the parents. What advice do you give parents or the guardians?
The advice I most often offer parents is to trust us, that this is what we do, to give us some breathing room, if that makes sense. I don't quite use those words, but to allow us the space to do what we know to do. And that's for two reasons. Number one, because this is what we do on a regular basis. And so we're really familiar with how to get students to learn. That's our specialty. But then also the space is to provide peace of mind for the parent, but also to relieve some of the tension that parents have expressed is happening in the household. Because when parent is fussing at the child all the time and child is frustrated with the parent, there just needs to be a little bit of a separation of sorts where the teacher can come in, the tutor can come in, and the parent can say, I trust you, you'll take it from here. I need to back away from this for the sake of the relationship with my child. And so that's definitely the advice that I give to parents, is to give us the space to do our work, and we promise you will not regret it.
I'm just thinking about schools today, public schools. They are resource constrained. I mean, they're really strapped and they're working with the best that they have. And so as a result, I wonder if the role of the tutor will become more prominent over time to really focus on the individual students' needs and really get them what they need. What do you think about that?
I absolutely do. And the articles and research that I have read, just because I try to stay up on these kinds of things, affirms that as well, that tutoring is becoming more and more of this huge multi-billion-dollar industry, because for several reasons, but for one of the ones you mentioned, the public schools just do not have ample resources to support students the way parents want their kids to be supported academically. And then even when there are tutoring programs, the teachers are maybe in charge of 15 students, and that's not really that model is not really effective. So yes, I think that tutoring is going to be a permanent staple for many more years. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that it won't look differently, but I absolutely think it will be here for a while.
You know, the number of women business owners is outpacing men, and leading the front are women of color, interestingly enough. How has been the experience for you as a young woman of color owning your own business? What are some of the experiences that you've had, good or bad, as it relates to your gender and your race?
Well, it's like one of two extremes. On one hand, there are people who are impressed and incredibly supportive and, you know, are very excited and open to helping me in any way that they can and helping me to gain exposure and helping me to get my story out. And on the other hand, there are people who I just talked about this. Actually, I wrote a post on Facebook today about a guy I met in the early MTT days, 2015, who I was introduced to him, and he was important. You know, I won't say what he did or anything, but he was important, and he barely gave me eye contact. It was like he didn't want to shake my hand. He could have cared less about who I was. And okay, I get it. Because I was just, who is this woman? But now that same guy is like sending me emails about how proud he is of me and would I like to be on his podcast and can I come speak at his event? And so I think that dynamic is always interesting where, and of course, I don't have any way to confirm because I don't live in his mind and in his heart. But it felt to me in that moment, I felt small in those early days. And I felt like I was discredited and discounted because of my race and my gender and because I'm young. So I felt that he just assumed she's a nobody, you know, she's not very important. Therefore, I'm going to spend my energy networking with the important people. And so it's just interesting how that's changed where as I have gotten more exposure and as I've gotten a lot more support, and he's just one of many, to be honest with you, Craig. So it's just interesting that dynamic where people they're starting to come around now and I'm confused because I'm like, I didn't think we were friends. I'm very confused, but I do think that those experiences are what they were because of being a woman of color in business. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, do you participate in any mastermind groups or other initiatives that help other women of color who have startups?
Yeah, so I'm starting to explore that option now. I think in years past, I did not feel I really had much to offer because I felt that I was still trying to keep myself from drowning and still learning. I'm just starting to get to the place where I do feel like, okay, I've learned some things. And I do feel I have some things that I can offer aspiring entrepreneurs or even entrepreneurs who are in, you know, years 1 through 5 and are really just trying to get their companies off the ground. So that is definitely something I am exploring more, but I have not committed to anything in particular just yet.
All right. And speaking of the future, where would you like to be 5 years from now in the future? What would you like to be doing?
Wow, 5 years from now. Let's see. MTT will be about 8 years old in 5 years. In 5 years, I would love to be, if not already doing this, I would love to be making moves and having conversations to get MTT, not just across the whole state of Maryland, but what would it look like to push into DC and to push into Northern Virginia and Pennsylvania? So that is something that from the very beginning, has always been something, you know, something that I've played around with in my mind. The goal is to really saturate Maryland first and really become a household name here, and then get to the point where we expand. So that's the hope.
Well, it definitely sounds like you are on the right track to me. So, Natalie, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on and sharing with us. And I hope to stay connected with you. And if our audience wants to stay connected with you, how should they do that?
Great question. I would love that. I love interaction with folks. So the best ways to really connect and interact with me would be on Facebook and Instagram. So on Facebook, I'm Natalie Mangrum, just like my name is. On Instagram, I'm Natty Mangrum, N-A-T-T-Y Mangrum. And I love connecting with entrepreneurs, non-entrepreneurs, people, whoever, via those platforms. Those are great ways for me to stay connected to folks and learn about people and be part of people's lives.
Well, I, for one, will reach out, and I'm sure others will, too. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Craig. This was great.
Well, that's our episode for today. Thank you so much for joining me. If you liked this episode, please indicate so on the particular podcast app that you're using. And, of course, if you are so inclined, subscribe to this podcast for future upcoming episodes. You will not want to miss them. Okay, take care.